In my experience, what I have seen to be the leading cause of wet pack is oversaturated steam. And this is steam coming from a boiler or from a generator. The facilities folks that are in charge of those things take care of them. That's their baby. And they'll tell you that they've got the best steam that there is, that, you know, you don't have to worry about it. We test it. We test the water and all of these things. But that boiler may be across the facility from the sterile processing department. There may be pipes that are older than we are, that are carrying that steam to us. And so the longer that steam has to travel, the more energy it loses over that distance.
Millions of patients undergo surgical procedures every single day. They place their lives in the hands of healthcare providers who are committed to delivering safe, functional, and sterile instrumentation for every surgery. Working behind the scenes are the technicians who go largely unknown, even to the patients whose lives are so dramatically impacted by their work. This is Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing. Join us as we explore this hidden world and introduce you to the unsung heroes who are driving the advancement of our profession. And now your hosts, Justin Poulin, Michael Matthews, and Hank Balch.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Joel Schaefer, Vice President of Engineering and Product Development for Sterile Services, LLC. Joel has over 15 years of experience working alongside sterile processing department staff and management. Growing from an on-site instrument repair technician into a consultative sales representative, Joel was able to personally design and manufacture Sterile Services' proprietary autoclave validation tools, including an inner lumen sensor unique to surgical instrumentation validation. Joel is a CRCST and a founding member of the Houston Isham chapter. With the increased awareness of the steam sterilization processes, Joel's ambition is to highlight the role of all hospital sterile processing departments and the steam sterilization process itself. Mike, this is going to be a good one. I know we've had a couple in the past that are kind of on the perimeter of this kind of conversation, but I definitely want to kick it off when we get into it with Joel about autoclave testing and validation. So much emphasis needs to be placed on the difference between verification and validation in our worlds.
We tend to make a lot of assumptions when it comes to our industry. And one of the biggest assumptions that we make is, you know, it revolves around our autoclaves. We assume that the autoclaves always do exactly what they tell us they're doing. And so when we find out that may not always be the case, it can kind of be a really scary thing. So we really want to dive into that difference, like you said, between verification and validation, and being able to know that what our autoclaves are doing are making our instruments safe for our patients and not make assumptions.
Yep, absolutely, Mike. So this is going to be a great one.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Joining us now is Joel Schaefer, Vice President of Engineering and Product Development for Sterile Services, LLC. Joel, thanks for coming on the show. We're really excited to talk to you about autoclave testing and validation today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Why don't we just start at the beginning, talk about autoclave testing, maybe give a background on that, and also validation, and why is so little known about it in the United States?
Well, testing is really more akin to the daily tests that we all do in the sterile processing departments, the biologicals and the Bowie Dicks. That's not really a validation per se. That's more of a verification. What validation is it's an empirical measurement of pressures, temperatures, and steam saturation that are used to create a three-dimensional map of the environment of the chamber inside of a steam autoclave during all of the phases of the sterilization cycle. Now, these phases are conditioning, heat up, exposure, exhaust, and dry, and they're all equally important to achieving sterility.
And so let me follow up there then. So you're differentiating, again, verification from a daily test to validation. And, you know, that initial question that Justin asked is a perception that we're getting out in the industry and in a lot of the folks internationally who listen to the podcast is there's a distinct difference between how folks do autoclave testing and validation overseas as opposed to in the U.S. Do you know the reason for that, and could you speak to that issue?
I have not been overseas to see the way that they validate. However, my colleagues have, and we're pretty well in line with what they do. But I believe the main reason that the U.S. hasn't caught on to it is because really, up until this latest version of AMES SP79, there hasn't been a standard that mandated anything more than the daily biologicals and chemical indicators and all of those things. And like I said, those are really a sterility verification and not a validation. I think also that the cost associated with electronic validation, which is what we do, the tools, the software, and training of a technician can be cost prohibitive to hospitals. You know, most hospitals are running on a razor tight budget and they just can't spend the money on something that they're not mandated to do.
I mean, speaking to those mandates then, today what you're telling us is there is not a mandate out there to do validation testing except for certain specific circumstances, right? So what can you outline what the circumstances today are that require you to do true validation testing of your autoclave?
Yes. So in the new SP79, in I believe it's 3.3.3.2, it states that the facilities are required to ensure steam quality by testing the steam to make sure that the saturation level is between 97 and 100%, that they have less than 3.5% of non-condensable gases, and that they're not superheating the steam as well.
And so when you say superheating, obviously you know what you're talking about, but when I hear that, it sounds like a very technical term, and it's one that probably my facilities manager would understand what you mean, but I'd say a lot of folks on the front lines may not, off the top of their head, know what superheated steam is. So what is that?
It's basically steam that is heated above the saturation point beyond a threshold, and that threshold that is stated in ST79 is 25 degrees Celsius.
And so what's the consequences when that happens?
When steam is superheated, it's too dry, and it's creating a suboptimal steam condition. It doesn't have the moisture to break through the outer layer of the protein of the spore and and therefore attack the spore itself and kill it.
So, Joel, this is really interesting stuff because we kind of just assume that the autoclave always functions properly. And we know that the autoclave has on it some sensors that help us determine, you know, certain things about it, like, you know, the temperature that it holds and the pressure that it holds. You know, what are the differences between the internal sensors that we look at kind of as a normal process versus the sensors that you guys are using when you validate these autoclaves?
In most sterilizers, there's one internal sensor, and that sensor is calibrated at the factory. And then once the autoclave is installed, and there's typically not another calibration done. It can be done by the technician. They usually don't calibrate them unless they're made aware of an issue. Our sensors that we use are calibrated annually, and they're calibrated to within very tight tolerances. It's plus or minus 0.9 degrees Fahrenheit on the tolerance. And we use multiple sensors, so we're not just getting one location of data. We're getting data throughout the entire chamber of the autoclave. And that's important if you have, say, a seal that is going bad, or if you have valves that are going bad inside of the autoclave. We can actually see those issues present themselves before you actually see a failure.
So following along that, are there any sort of warning signs that notify a, you know, a sterile processing technician that say, you know, hey, you probably need to have a, you know, more stringent verification done on your autoclave? Or is this something that has to be done completely preventatively, regardless of what you're seeing on your daily tests?
It should be done regardless of what you're seeing on your daily tests. Those tests are proving that there is lethality. They're not validating that you're hitting all of the parameters that AMI dictates that you are supposed to be hitting, which is the temperature for the time and for the but the steam saturation percentage that they recommend.
And so, Joe, obviously in the field, y'all are doing these validation tests on existing autoclaves that have been in use, you know, for a number of years. When you're testing an autoclave that has not been validated, you know, since it was manufactured, are you seeing a higher rate of failures, or are you seeing issues like what you're talking about with the valve issues and other things come up that have been in use but not been caught yet?
A lot of times we do. We typically get called in for the more common issues like wet pack, failed Bowie dicks, things of that nature, and we help get to the root of the problem. If we haven't seen an autoclave before, I believe a 30% rate of issues such as the clock being off or the date being off, or that maybe it's getting hotter than it's supposed to get or not as hot as it's supposed to get for what it's programmed to.
Yeah, so we've got a question actually about the clock and the time settings. But before we get to that, you mentioned wet packs, and you know that's a pretty dirty word in sterile processing. If there's one thing that's going to get some blood pressure up in a sterile processing technician and, you know, a manager, OR director, no one likes the term, or I should say no one likes to hear the words wet packs, because that means all kinds of issues. It means delays, obviously, first of all, but then it means a whole cascade of root cause analysis and really trying to figure out what is the cause of this, and not only how we get the trays today we need, but how we make sure that tomorrow is not the same issue. So when you look at these causes from your perspective and looking at the technical part of steam sterilization, what do you see in the data as the cause of wet packs, and also how does that impact a failed biological test?
Well, in my experience, what I have seen to be the leading cause of wet packs is oversaturated steam. And this is steam coming from a boiler or from a generator. Facilities folks that are in charge of those things take care of them. That's their baby. And they'll tell you that they've got the best steam that there is, that, you know, you don't have to worry about it. We test it. We test the water and all of these things. But that boiler may be across the facility from the sterile processing department. There may be pipes that are older than we are that are carrying that steam to us. And so the longer that steam has to travel, the more energy it loses over that distance. And if you factor in things like improper insulation, the steam traps that are along the way that are designed to catch the condensation, if those get filled up, they're not being properly maintained, then that supersaturated steam just keeps flowing on and ends up getting injected into your autoclave. So now you have really wet steam, and I know that sounds kind of weird, but wet steam is, you know, the super saturated steam, and that predisposes you to have wet packs. And it's harder for that autoclave to get rid of all of that extra moisture. Now, if you factor in the human element, say the technician didn't dry the instruments off fully before they put them in the autoclave, or they didn't crack the door open, which I know some people don't like that. Some people do like that. Let the load normalize to the room temperature a little bit before you pull it out. Certainly don't pull it up under an air conditioner vent. You don't want to do that. You know, don't touch them, things like that. That can also lead to wet packs. But if you have an environment that is super saturated to begin with, then it's just a recipe for wet loads.
And so how does all of that impact then the biological question when you're looking at failed BIs?
Failed BIs is another one that's contentious with the staff. If the steam is super saturated, it can insulate the biological and not allow enough heat to penetrate to that biological to kill the spores. And so it's basically like soaking it in water and trying to sterilize it at the same time. And it just kind of acts like a blanket that insulates it. So that's one cause that would cause the BI to fail. Another one that's really more common that I see is that the technician that put the biological into the incubator didn't break the inner vial properly. They don't get the right read off on it. So it does come back to human error.
And so, you know, going back, and this may be a question that you don't want to answer or can't answer, but it's not often that we get folks who know the intricacies of steam sterilization on the show. So this whole BI question, biologicals, it is a contentious issue, especially when we're looking at this from an international perspective. And again, you know, referencing the 120 countries that listen to the podcast, there's a lot of folks out there that are not even using biologicals at all. And then here we are in the U.S. having a conversation about what do you do if a biological fails? So, you know, they're probably sitting over there thinking, well, it doesn't really matter because we're not using them anyways. If it fails or if it doesn't fail, you know, it's not impacting the way that they do quality management of their autoclaves. Do you have an opinion on that? You know, again, looking at this from if the autoclave has been validated with all the sensing technologies that you're referencing, I know from the regulatory standpoint or the recommendation standards out there are very specific toward biologicals. But that aside, what's your perspective on that debate?
I believe biologicals are a great tool for daily verification of lethality. But once again, I don't believe that they prove that you're reaching the parameters set aside by AMI for the parameters for sterilization. I'm not going to get into an argument with the big biological manufacturers. I'm not ready to take on that battle. I think they have their place, but I think verification is also, it's a high-level test that it leaves nothing to be deciphered. It's the data is the data, and the data doesn't lie. And so if, you know, all the parameters are met, then there's no reason for it to not be an effective sterilization cycle. We've all heard of, you know, biologicals that have tested that the lethality was reached, and we know that the load aborted in the middle of the exposure phase. Yeah, I haven't personally witnessed that, but I have heard stories similar to that from various people. So I don't know that the biologicals are the end-all, get-all, and I don't know that taking empirical data is cost-effective for a hospital to do on a daily basis. I think it's more of a kind of like you have to validate all of your other equipment in the hospital at least once a year. You know, the autoclave should be done as well.
Joel, we've heard a certain term on a couple of instances, and we've heard it in previous podcasts with Jonathan Wilder and with Renee Viss, this idea of non-condensable gases. Can you explain to us what a non-condensable gas is, number one? And then number two, why is that a threat to the sterilization process?
Simply put, a non-condensable gas is just air or carbon dioxide, one of the two. And what it does is it forms a pocket that prohibits the sterilant from penetrating that pocket of air. And so if that pocket of air is over where your instrumentation is that you're trying to sterilize, it's insulated from the sterilant. And so you're not going to have an effective sterilant contact on that instrumentation.
So I think this is kind of a terrifying issue when you consider the fact that it's very realistic that your biological may pass and your autoclave may say that everything has gone well, but there is a pocket in place, maybe just positioned perfectly over that laparoscopic set or perfectly over those total knee instruments that prevents that from actually being sterilized, and yet we may not know anything about it. So what can we do as technicians or managers to help prevent that from being an issue in our hospitals?
I can say that in all of the time that I've been doing this, I have never experienced a non-compressed gas pocket on any of our sensors, meaning that none of our sensors have been insulated from, you know, steam penetration because of these non-condensed gases. Typically, those would be at the upper end of the autoclave chamber near the top. They would be forced to the top or forced to the bottom. Your temperature probe that's in the drain, that's the factory installed temperature probe, would probably pick that up. But we have never seen that occur within the killing field, if you will, inside of the autoclave.
Killing field. I like that term. We need to get a graphic out there with a photo of what the killing field looks like.
I just pulled that one out of the air.
All right. Well, you know, let's do that. That can be your show graphic if we can get it together. How's that? Now, a large part, obviously, of this podcast is to equip folks who listen to it with the tools to take it back to their department and protect the patient better. And of course, we call it fighting dirty in our social media posts and everything. But one of the things that you reference is that divide or that misunderstanding between a facilities team, plant engineering, and a sterile processing team. And I know as a sterile processing leader, because I'm not the expert when it comes to facilities management, I would feel a little unequipped or unconfident, you know, to speak to that guy who says, oh, no, we got great steam. We got perfect steam. Everything's great. It's my baby. To, you know, say, well, I don't believe you, or you don't know what you're talking about, or maybe you're wrong. If there's someone out here listening today who feels like they may have an issue, where would you turn them to get educated on these topics? What are some resources that they could reach out to or leverage, you know, even to bring in some experts like yourself to have this deeper conversation? What would you say to those folks?
Yes, I would start off by listening to the two-part podcast that you guys did with Jonathan Wilder. I learned a ton from that, and I'm sure everybody else will as well. You could definitely reach out to my company or any other company that you may find that does the same type of validation. My question would be to the facilities people, where are you testing the steam at? Because you may be testing it right there at the boiler, but that steam has to travel through all these pipes to get to my autoclave. And how do you know the end result is the same as where it starts? Because honestly, that's where it's important. That steam may be going to the kitchen, maybe going to the laundry and to the sterile processing department. And in my opinion, the most important customer is the sterile processing department.
So Joel, as we kind of wrap this up, the last thing we want to ask you is, can you tell us some common myths in the industry that are related to autoclave validation? Like, what are some things to look out for? One of the jobs I feel like Beyond Clean has is to sort of reset or level set some of the knowledge that's out there. You know, a great one that comes to mind all the time is that you can't use stainless steel brushes on to brush surgical instruments. And, you know, you just have to make sure that it's not on a coated instrument. And, you know, you want to educate people that way. What are some myths related to autoclave validation that people need to be aware of?
Probably the biggest myth is that the time and date settings on the autoclave, which print out on the autoclave receipt, those aren't important. And the reality is that if, you know, heaven forbid something bad were to happen, that and legal gets involved, that the receipt from that autoclave is a legal document. So the time and date settings are very important. I would also say that that BIs and Bowie Dix monitor all the parameters necessary for sterilization is another one. They don't speak to steam saturation or the non-condensable gases or the exposure time. They just let you know that either there was a robust vacuum or that it got hot enough to kill the Bacillus stereothermophilus. Those are probably the two biggest ones.
Excellent, Joel. Really great interview. They always go by so fast. Lots of good information there. I always love it when a guest on the show plugs a former episode too. You might have been the first one to do that. So thank you for definitely shouting out to some of our previous guests. We've had many great ones. You've been a very good one today. And just once again, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be a part of this. I think what you guys do is amazing. And just thank you from all of us. I know it's a lot of work that you put into it, but it doesn't go unnoticed.
Thank you for that. That was Joel Schaefer, Vice President of Engineering and Product Development for Sterile Services, LLC. And Hank, I think even just the last thing that we talked about, the time and date settings, you know, very important, especially if you get pulled into any kind of legal action. And then I loved what you said about the dirty word in sterile processing being wet packs.
Well, yeah, anytime anyone talks about the legal aspect of anything, Justin, it throws me back into my short stint in law school. And I will say short because I did not graduate, but I learned enough to know that lawyers will come and they'll dig until they find something. It's either there, maybe even not there sometimes. And in the world of sterile processing, there's a lot of true documentation that's got to be correct. And it doesn't take a lot to set an attorney off on a goose chase, you know, to find something that we could have fixed if we would have known that it was a problem. So, yeah, that's a great point that he brought up. And it's a good reminder that we're operating in a world, even though those envelopes go in a filing cabinet and they go offsite for a number of years, that true value there that has got to be correct or it could come back and bite us in the butt.
Absolutely. And it's also becoming much more prevalent. We see these lawsuits all the time now. The world is taking notice of sterile processing, but it does also increase your liability. And, you know, people are going to go in and dig. And so we know it's serious business. It's people's lives. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher, and now also on Google Play and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.